Hi, this is Pirate Davy Jones with PiratePods.com. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Brandon Cruz of Dr. No. How are you doing, Brandon?
I'm tired. I'm really tired. I've been surfing all day. I got up really early this morning, so, you know, didn't have a gig this weekend, so got to do something to, you know, keep creative.
So you like surfing. How long have you been doing that for?
Just a little bit longer than I've been in bands. I think probably been surfing like 34 years or something like that.
Wow.
Been in Dr. No since, 27 years now? 26, 27? Somewhere like that. I don't know. Long time. I'm old.
You're old but experienced, and I'm sure you can share a lot of that with us. So, Brandon, you've been touring for at least 2 decades. I mean, at least,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. I've been with one band or another. I've been going off and on for quite some time.
So during that time, I mean, you must have seen a lot of changes. I guess some things stay the same, but could you tell me what notable changes you've seen in the hardcore scene?
First off, we have to define hardcore, because there's been a division among the rank and file punk rock fan of today.
Mm-hmm.
Who considers hardcore not what I necessarily would consider hardcore. To me, hardcore is, well, I would say it started with middle class in 1978, from L.A. I would say it encompassed Black Flag, Bad Brains, bands that took what X and the Weirdos and bands like that, you know, the Dills, the Eyes, the Bags, the Controllers, the Gears, the Germs at times in early 78 probably had a bit more of a hardcore edge, but Darby wasn't angry. Darby was fucked up. He may have been angry, but he was too fucked up to really voice it. I mean, he was a snarling panther, you know, let out of his cage on stage. But punk rock back then, when hardcore, what we considered hardcore, was just a louder, more aggressive, angrier version of what X and the you know, the bands that were kind of, we didn't call them poppy, and I still wouldn't think X is poppy. They're more folky, but you know, it's like if X was a punk band, what were the Germs?
Huh.
You know, and if the Germs were a punk band, what was Black Flag?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of, you know, somehow it became divided those are the old fart bands. You know, that's the Flesh Eaters and, you know, Christie's. God, he's 22. He's an old man. You know, this is back in 78 or so. And, you know, today you've got kids saying that, you know, old punk rock bands are just old punk rock bands. And then the new punk rock bands are basically the screamo, emo, whatever the hell they want to call themselves bands. And then hardcore is Hatebreed and Madball and Agnostic Front. And, you know, hardcore, Agnostic Front was, they were a hardcore punk band. They just started a little bit later than the Bad Brains.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The East Coast scene got away from, you know, it took longer for them to catch up, I think, and get on a par with L.A. And, you know, at times they surpassed it, if not, you know, kept up right along with it. They were amazing bands, and even all throughout the Midwest, bands, the Effigies and D'Cruzin and so many bands. Husker Du, their first couple of records were definitely hardcore records. They were, you know, they were just amazing, you know. And then the stuff splinters off into emo, and you know, there was a great thing I saw recently, a video clip of Ian MacKay saying how stupid he thought the word emo was, because he had a quote in it that was so it just so perfectly summed up what I'd thought all along as well. You know, hardcore punk rock music is emotional to begin with.
That's right.
So to label it as something is just, you know, it's like labeling new wave and then breaking new wave down into pop, power pop, you know, taking ska down to reggae and two-tone and dance hall and reggaeton, and just, you know, you can subdivide and subdivide and subdivide until you've got each single, you know, one single person standing there saying, yeah, I'm this and I'm that. And, you know, it's an often quoted thing, but, you know, everybody wants to be different just like everybody else. And so as soon as something gets popular, somebody's going to say that it's not the popular thing anymore, and what they're doing is the popular thing, even though it may be the same thing.
Right.
Renamed, repackaged, regurgitated, on and on. So the differences I've seen in hardcore, from what it means to me to what it means to other people, are pretty much that. I have seen a breaking away, so to speak, of the tribe, of the community of punk rock into smaller subdivisions. I've seen it splinter off into almost warring factions.
Wow.
Where these guys hate these guys, and this group hates this group, and that band sings about this stuff, so you can't play with that, which is bullshit, because in the early days, there were so few bands that, you know, you had to have X and the Screamers and the Germs and Oingo Boingo all on the same bill. Because that's just who was available to play that Wednesday night at the Whiskey in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, $2. And you got to see art punk, and you got to see, you know, some pretty heavy-duty punk rock, and you got to see New Wave, and you got to see art damaged, psychotic, electronic stuff in one night for cheap. And that was great.
Yeah.
People were more open-minded then. People accepted many more things. It's like, you know, when people would come to a gig, you could tell it was their first time. But if they seemed to have an open mind and they seemed to be going along with, you know, not overtly violent and not just being a complete idiot, like they had seen the episode of Quincy with punk rockers on it, and they thought that people had safety pins in their cheeks and jumped up and down and pogoed and broke glass and rolled in it. You know, you had people show up like that and do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they usually didn't make it to a second gig. But then you'd have people that would just come in, and you could tell the open-minded people. I'm sure I looked, you know, a bit out of place in my first few gigs, but people, I guess, kind of realized that I wasn't going away and that this was something I was into, and, you know, kind of started to encourage it and engage me in, you know, conversation and let me know about parties and other gigs and other bands, and you know, it's just, you know, it's a welcoming thing. And I've noticed kind of in different touring and social situations that sometimes that's not always the case these days, that the subdivisions are driving people further and further and deeper into their little subdivisions and their little cliques and their little crews and their little whatever it is, you know. And it's, you know, we're not a bunch of teams. We're not, you know, teams are for jock sports, and punk rockers, as I knew them by the hundreds back in the day, were usually not the jocks.
Yeah.
And were usually not the team players, and they were the individuals who, you know, felt really out of place in high school and felt really out of place in social situations. But then you found this like-minded group of freaks and castaways and runaways, and you know, it was the land of the misfit toys, and you know, well, nothing against Jerry and Glenn Doyle, man, but you know, Misfits really fits, because it was a group of people that didn't belong anywhere else, and somehow we all found each other. And then somewhere along the line, somebody decided to start breaking up that group. And the popularity flared. Every few years there'd be another thing on punk violence and punk gangs and punk this and that, and of course it attracted a more violent reaction, and a bunch of, you know, kids that would show up at gigs with heads shaved that a week before wouldn't have been caught dead at a gig, and a year before that would have been beating up the very same people they were now being buddies with.
Yeah.
So it just kept regurgitating itself as a newer, gnarlier, more violent style. That's the reason many bands broke up.
Mm.
You know, I spent some time in Dead Kennedys, and I talked with Biafra at length, and the other guys, and they all pretty much quit doing it because it became so violent. Ian, and with Minor Threat and the reaction they got from that, even though the kids were supposed to be straight edge and not drunk and not high and not loaded and not getting laid, they were sure frustrated about something, because that was some of the rowdiest shows I've ever been to. You know, and nothing wrong with getting out in the pit and, you know, skanking around and slamming your ass off, but, you know, when somebody falls down, you pick them up. What really cracks me up is the violent reaction that a lot of so-called open-minded punk rockers have to the so-called new school hardcore kids with their type of dancing, which, you know, people will kind of give derogatory terms like, you know, picking up change, or, you know, kung fu practice, or, you know, whatever it is they call it. It seems rather derogatory, but those people weren't around when it transitioned from pogoing to slamming.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got the same reaction from the older crowd that just pogoed when we started slamming.
Ah.
And they thought we were violent and stupid and ridiculous, and it wasn't dancing and it wasn't an expression, it was just a violent outburst. And, you know, now you've got these kids that are out there actually throwing their fists around, you know, blur and kicking, you know, blindly. And I've seen some people just get drilled. But, you know, I got to dig it, because it's new and it's an extension of what has been going on, you know, since day one. It's an expression. Nobody can tell you how to punk rock dance. You know,
that's
nobody
right.
can tell you how to punk rock dress or punk rock think. It's so much deeper than that. It's just ridiculous to even try. I when people come up to me that really don't know a lot about the scene, or they find out I'm in a band, and I tell them it's a punk rock band, and they say, "Oh, what's that all about?" You know, I don't have a month to spend with them, to take them around, to let them experience it. Because it's not something I feel that you can tell in a quick conversation. I think it's something you have to experience. And, you know, I'm 44. I've gone far past the, you know, let's go sleep in dumpsters overnight. Well, actually, it wasn't dumpsters. It was more like the Salvation Army and the Goodwill, when they used to have the closed depository boxes.
Right.
You know, we just go get a bottle of cheap vodka and a carton of cigarettes and hole up in there and have a party. And, you know, and it'd be on Hollywood Boulevard or somewhere, and, you know, stagger out at 5 or 6 in the morning, depending if you got to sleep, you know, maybe later. And, you know, then go wander around and find your car, somebody's car, or call somebody for a ride and go and, you know, do it all over again. You can't take somebody back to those times and say, well, this is how it was for us. And
yeah.
Like, well, where were your parents? Where was your family? Well, my family was the people I hung out with. That's kind of the gang mentality part of it, but it was, you know, there were safety in numbers, and there were situations where people that weren't aware of punk rock or just shocked or disgusted by your look would get violent. And it wasn't necessarily the best idea to be wandering around Hollywood by yourself looking like that. Let Oxnard, where a lot of us grew up, you know, in the Nardcore scene. You know, we'd have cowboys chase us down the street and jocks corner us in parking lots and, you know, out would come the bats and the chains. And it's like, you know, thank God there were five or six buddies of mine with me because, you know, we got away.
Those people didn't get it back then.
Yeah, or at least we incurred some damage. I mean, you know, I shed blood and lost teeth and broke bones so these kids could go to Hot Topic and buy their Manic Panic and their studded belt and their Blink 182 shirt. You know, but they throw that gear on and walk right out, and they're accepted by the masses. And, you know, that's just the way it is. I can't really gripe about it. I can't change it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just in an old punk band, but, you know, I got the battle scars because of this scene and because of this music and this lifestyle and this mindset that I have.
Wow.
And, you know, nothing can take that away. It's something I lived through, something I've been through, and something I'm still going through. You know, and you know, to get back, I know I've drifted off, but I usually come back to where we started. You know, to now maybe change it up just a bit though, because you asked what have I seen different. I think I've covered a lot of the differences.
Yeah.
You know, but some of the same things that I do see. Are when old fans come together or new fans who are so into the music in the scene, and they're the ones who get it. You know, they're the ones that got to come back for a second, third, and fourth gig, and they're still there, and they're still hanging out. Those people, that sense of community is still there.
Wow.
That sense of, you know, let's get in a van and start driving and do shows, and if one falls apart, we'll play a house party and we'll pass the hat, and we don't have enough money for a motel room. Can we crash on your floor? That is still alive and well to this day. Something that Black Flag and DOA and Minor Threat and Dead Kennedys and all those guys, when they first started touring in the early and mid 80s, that is still alive and well. We can still be in Idaho and the show falls through and it moves to a basement and people bring food and people bring drinks and people let us stay in their houses, and the community is still there, but it's that underground one that you don't see out on MTV, you don't see in the mall,
no.
You don't see, you know, on the news, but we see it, and that's the important part, because without people like that still holding true to the old ethos of punk rock and punk rock community and communal living and thinking, you know, we'd be really screwed a lot of times out on tour. Because we haven't been this big, you know, major label on a major, you know, bus with, you know, big screen TV and a PlayStation. We're in a lucky to be in a van. Usually we're in a truck with a trailer and everybody's crammed in and there's just not a lot of room, and you know, the smells start getting worse and you know, the merch, you know, gets wet at a gig, and you know, the mildew happens, and you know, it's just not pretty at all. You know, even when I was in Dead Kennedys, which I thought was going to be like, okay, I take a few steps up here in the punk rock rung, so to speak. It wasn't necessarily so. You know, Ray still ended up stinking after a while. You know, DH and I got on each other's nerves for a while. You know, I had to go my own separate way for a few days to get away from Klaus. It was, you know, everything had its kind of flashback to how it was in the old days. And, you know, it was fun. It was great to travel. It's always great to meet new people and play to new audiences and see new countries and cities and continents and whatnot. But, you know, that communal sense is still there, and it's probably why I'm still in a band. because I can still go out and sing a 27-year-old song to a 15-year-old kid and get the look on their face like they've heard it for the first time.
That's cool.
They have. And possibly that is their first time. But it's my 27,000th time singing it. But if I don't go out there and deliver 110% of what I got into it, they're going to go, these guys do it better. You know? So it's just, it's not a job, it's my home. Really? And nobody pays me to go surf. Nobody pays me to skate. In fact, I have to usually bail myself out from skating empty pools and stuff. So, you know, these things cost me money, so it's not, you know, it never was about the money, never is going to be about the money. You know, we're not that big as a band. You know, we've been around a long time, people know the name, people know the logo, some people. But, you know, we're not Bad Religion. Know the guys, respect them, don't know if I'd want to be them. It carries a lot of extra bullshit being that huge. You know, you really got to... I mean, we really deliver. We bring it, and, you know, there's no bullshit about the Dr. No Show. It's, you know, you're going to come for a pretty high-powered event, experience, gig, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, to be... You know, having to answer to lawyers and managers and PR people and this and that. It's like, you know, we're self-contained. We answer to each other and we answer to our audience. That's it.
There's a freedom in that, though, right?
There's such a freedom in that, you know? And it's, you know, the show must go on. I've played shows with amoebic dysentery throwing up and you know, just blasting the back of my shorts out with diarrhea for 4 days, losing 35 pounds, you know, in Italy. But we had gigs. We had to play them. I broke my shoulder. I had to get back on stage and wrap it up and keep going and then go to the doctor and then go the next night and play the next gig. You know, and it, yeah, it would have been easy to go, oh, fuck, I can't go on. I'm injured. You know, but, you know, that's, you know, Bono would do that. we don't have insurance. You know, it's the only way to make any more money to go and actually maybe take care of your injury is to go and play a few more gigs and hopefully you sell some merch.
All right, you mentioned Biafra and that you've talked to him at length. You've done this after your stint with the Dead Kennedys as well?
Yeah, it was after. He wasn't too pleased when he found out I was going to be doing it. Initially, and some things were said. I'm not going to say he started it, so then he can counter with I started it. Things were said, and I still respect the guy and his opinions, and I don't have to agree with all of them, especially when they pertain to me. But I do respect the fact that he's able to give them and give them freely. So, you know, I can't fault the guy for opening his mouth and stating his opinion. But once I was no longer in the band is when our relationship regained what it had been and is now actually surpassed what it had been. Because I've known him since 81.
I mean, wow.
Maybe even before that. Dr. No opened for them in 80 or 81, but I had seen them play a number of times. DH and I were friends. So I remember going to San Francisco to see him in 79, so I know I knew him then. But now, you know, we're of legal age now. I don't know how adult we are. you know, we are still doing what it is that we do, and it's not necessarily the most grown-up thing to do. State of mind, age has no meaning, blah, blah, blah. No absurd bullshit statement about not being old, but you actually are there. Yeah, so we're a couple old guys still doing, you know, teenage stuff, and we enjoy it. You know, we talk a mature act, but, you know, we're probably pretty immature about our dealings with a lot of other things. It's not an act. And, you know, we just decided that basically it was time to bury the hatchet, because all of this talk about the band just basically hyped the band, which is not something that he wanted, and something that I wanted to quit. So we just decided, let's not do this in public anymore. Why don't we talk, have a conversation? Maybe we'll have something in common, which you wouldn't believe how much we do have in common now, because he mentioned me the other day. He goes, you know, from now on, no matter what you do, when Dead Kennedys comes up, your name's attached to it.
Mm.
Wow. The hell have I done?
Mm.
You know, because I have great memories of doing a lot of fun things with it, and then I have memories of, or thoughts of, basically, yeah, you know, what I just said, what the hell have I done? Or what the hell did I do?
Mm.
But, you know, the reasons behind me doing it is they've been documented, they've been talked about. It's, I don't really feel like rehashing it.
Sure.
I did what I did because I felt like it at the moment. I don't regret it. I had a great time. I met amazing people. I saw amazing places. I played with some of my all-time hero bands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and got this good. Put 100,000 miles on my passport and saw the world twice. So, you know, who could say that they got to do that, you know, in their 40s?
You know? Yeah.
that was the cool part of it. You know, I was just some kid. Just, oh, yeah, hey, kid, come and do this. Like, I'd already been around for a while. And then I got to do that. Just, wow. And there wasn't even really a letdown to it, because it's, you know, it was what it was, and I knew exactly what it was pretty much going to entail, and it didn't disappoint, and it didn't, like, overhype itself, and it didn't blow me away, go beyond my wildest expectations. It was what I thought it was going to be, mm-hmm. and then it got to be what I considered not exactly what I wanted it to be anymore, so parted ways. Easy as that. I think Biafra respected that. And, you know, now we can talk, and I can go see a spoken word in L.A., and he can come see us play in San Francisco, and, you know, we can hang out and have coffee. And the last time we saw each other, I think we stood on the sidewalk and talked till 3 or 4 in the morning. So people, and this is in San Francisco, and you know, so my friends would be walking down the street, and they'd see me, and they'd see him. And this is just probably a month after I had quit the band, so nobody really knew we were really talking friendly.
Hmm.
So my friends would see me and just be like, "Oh, you okay? You cool? You all right?" I'm like, "Please." Not that I'm Mr. Macho, but Biafra and I in a fight would be pretty damn silly. it wouldn't even go there. Okay, I verbally would not want to spar him. Physically, I don't think I'd have a problem. And then his friends would walk up and see me and just kind of sneer and be like, "Oh, wow, what are you doing?" Huh. And he'd just say, "We're talking,"
mm-hmm.
and they would leave. And that was it. It was nobody else's business.
Mm.
You know, just like, you know, I can't speak for the rest of the band about why they do what they do or why they did what they did.
Mm.
That's what those three did. And what those three did with Biafra, it was none of my business. What I did with those guys while I was with them as a band member, yeah, I can speak about that. That was my business. That was me up there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what Biafra did or thought or said while he was helping to create all of that Dead Kennedys, I wasn't there.
Mm.
I was there for 4 gigs. You know, like Klaus would always tell people, I've been to every Dead Kennedy show.
Mm.
Never missed one. You know, it's like, well, oh, I only saw you guys about 4 times or opened for you 4 times. So, you know, the rest of the time, I don't know what went on. I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to be, you know. I wanted to sing punk rock songs. That's what I like to do.
So, if you, Brandon, if you weren't making music, would you consider acting again?
That would depend. That would really depend. I mean, I'm in the entertainment field as a money-making, you know, career. Mm-hmm. Anyways, you know, I work in the post-production end of television shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that affords me the freedom to be able to go and tour. When I feel like getting the hell away from L.A. and the constant grind of all this crap, or getting out of Oxnard because of, you know, the constant crap. It is Oxnard. Just when I need to, you know, I want to go surf a different wave. I want to go eat a different food. I want to go show my wife an amazing place that I got to see a few years ago, you know, with a band. I want to take a trip. I want to go. I just want to, you know, experience life, and to stay in one place is just stagnating and boring. Hmm. So I have to keep all the options open. So acting is one of the options. It would have to be the right thing, though. You know, indie films interest me a great deal because the majority of them are done kind of punk rock style. Mm-hmm. But then there's a lot of them that are, you know, funded by Lou Wasserman or Sumner Redstone. So, you know, what are you going to do? You know, Steve Jobs is funding things, but I use a fucking Apple at my work, you know? You know, I drive a car that was built by, you know, a big corporation. It's, you know, it's a double standard sometimes, you know, saying, yeah, I'm a punk rocker. I espouse punk rock living and these political views and this open-mindedness. But then, you know, my wife goes to Target to shop for the kids because it's cheap. And, you know, we got to buy food, and, you know, Ralph's or Whole Foods is right down the street. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to support mom-and-pop shops as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the fact is, you know, I don't sew, I don't knit, I can't make my own clothes. You know, I can't walk to work. Many of these things are an impossibility.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to. And I know when I am doing something that is against what I basically believe in and have believed in for, you know, 29, for a long time, you know, years. And, I, you know, it's just to be consciously aware of what you're doing.
Mm.
And know that when you do have to cross that, you said you never would, because inevitably you do. You know, because if there is the purest punk rocker out there, he lives in a cave naked and has no music.
Thanks a lot.
But he thinks a lot. You know, he thinks about all the bands he would probably love to hear. But you know. Somebody had to make that CD. Somebody had to make that CD player. Somebody had to, you know, pour that rubber to make those shoes, to, you know, dye those clothes. And
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't live as a caveman and expect to get anywhere. And it's, you know, it's not like I'm involved in the big rat race to go make the millions, buy the giant mansion, and drive the bitch in his car. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that's attainable, and if I had it, I'd probably wreck it. So, you know, what's the point? I want to be comfortable, I want to be happy, I want to provide for my family.
Yeah.
You know, and if kids want to come up and say, why is your Dr. No shirt now $12 and last month it was $10? Well, fucking printing people who are a bunch of punk rockers just raised the price $2 on it. So what, am I supposed to stay true punk rock roots and say, you know what, nothing over $10? It's like, no. Dude, that's called inflation. You know, when I put gas in my car to go to play my gig,
oh, man.
I tell them, hey, look, you know, I'm in a punk band. I can't pay $3.20 a gallon. I got to pay $10 for the whole tank. No, it doesn't work that way. know, you have to use major corporation goods. You have to buy things that are made by really evil, fucked up people and companies. You know, we have to live in a country that's run by really fucked up, evil people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what's the alternative?
Yeah.
You know, uprooting my entire family to go live in a jungle in Costa Rica where they have their own set of problems. There's no perfect world. There's no perfect place. Where you are, you can make as perfect as possible.
Right.
But then, you know, even then, the word perfection has a flaw, because even the most precise architects, artists, designers, builders, what have you, from early on, like American Indians, would make a circle but wouldn't complete it. Because that would be perfection, and as a human being, we aren't perfect.
No.
So who are we to think that we can create something perfect? You know, there's only, well, there's many religions, and there's many books, and there's many gods. So take your pick of which one. Mm-hmm. But only that one that you believe in can do something that perfect. That's just my thought.
Thanks. You know? Yeah.
And I go more towards the, you know, Eastern, if anybody cares or wonders, it's much more of an Eastern Buddhist slant to my beliefs in a religious form. Although I would encompass, you know, the good in just about anything. You know, it's a hodgepodge, but it's, you know, probably the basic tenets are, you know, somewhere along the lines of a slightly out of step Buddhist.
That's something I
actually
didn't know.
Very out of step Buddhist. Well, I'm sober. I'm a vegan. I want to live a healthy lifestyle. I don't want to kill myself like I've seen countless hundreds of my fellow punk rock and surfing friends, and just people from life in general. You know, people that weren't ever punks or surfers or whatever, just people I grew up with, people I met, people I worked with. You know, drugs, alcohol, the tobacco, that shit it shortens the lifespan, you know. And I have fun in my life. And that's, you know, one of my greatest goals is to have as much fun as humanly possible. You know, and include my family in it.
Right on. Right on.
Because, you know, they are one of my greatest joys and, you know, most, you know, when it's all over and said and done, I'm not going to probably be laying on my deathbed thinking, fuck, that one Dr. No song we did was really good. No, I'll be thinking, and my kids, my wife, I did it. I pulled it off. You know, music to me is a means to work out frustrations, to write about what I disagree with, to celebrate what I agree with, and then just to make crap up just because it's fun. You know, because it can be many things. It's like, we're not a political band, we're not a anarchist band, we're not an oi band, we're not a street punk band, we just play music. And, you know, sometimes people say, so what is your subject matter? Subjects. We write about subjects, you know. Yeah. What do you write about politically? Politics. You know, what do you write about humanity? Humans. You know, it's pretty general. If there is one thing current with Dr. No that has been consistent with Dr. No since the beginning is a very staunch anti-Catholicism view. Because that is just, as a group, as a group, the Dr. No as a whole Catholicism probably jacked up and was a part of more of our lives than it wasn't. So that's, you know, that has led to terms such as some of our records, like Plug in Jesus and the new one, Killing for God, and a lot of songs like God Told Me To and Life Returns. And, you know, the founding guitarist, Kyle, was a very well-spoken and learned man and wrote amazing lyrics and seemed to have written a thesaurus himself. You know, he used great big words and was really into pronunciation, and he just wrote really crazy songs about Catholic things that happened, and, you know, he knew exactly what, you know, stigmata was, and, you know, a crevice of nitre and stone, and, you know, things like that were, like, from the Dark Ages. He was very well versed in that stuff, so that's kind of one main theme. But it's, you know, it's like organized religion to me is just, you know, another way of, you know, being a Democrat or Republican. You know, it's putting yourself in a group and calling yourself a thing and worshiping one thing. And it's like, you know, cut the bullshit. It's money. You know, you're a career politician, you're a career, you know, televangelist, or your career monk, or your career whatever, you know, they say, oh, these, you know, jihad-loving Muslims, these extremists are the enemy. And it's like, well, what about the just hellfire and brimstone extremists that are right here in our own country? You know, and all over the world, or the people that take it upon themselves to say, well, let's go to that country and convert them to Christianity because they need the Lord. You know what? That country's been doing just fucking fine without you for 5,000 years plus. Why are you going to go and jack them up with something that's going to make them feel guilty and then ask them for money? I don't know. I don't understand organized religion, never will. Don't know that I really want to. I just want to be able to make fun of it. And I have the freedom to do that.
Yeah.
You know, don't agree with a lot of stuff about this country. I don't agree with a lot of these things that go on politically. But the Constitution, I think, is a pretty bitchin' piece of paper because we do get to do things that a lot of other people don't.
Right. Yeah.
And the fact that I can sit here and say, you know, so-and-so is a fucking idiot and this country sucks because of, you know, I could give some uneducated answer and I'd sound like just as big of an idiot too, so I'm not even going to go there because I don't have the time to get into a dissertation on, you know, the political climate of the United States as of April Fool's Day in 2007. But needless to say, it's pretty jacked up and it needs fixing. And I feel really let down by my peers. You know, where did all those punk rockers go that said we were going to get rid of Reagan and we were going to bring in this third party and we were going to, you know, do all these amazing things and things were going to change? Well, you know, so many people that I grew up with, except for the ones that are dead or in prison or whatnot, you know, now wear a suit and go to work and, you know, are not still where we were or where we're at. You know, they gave up on it. And when they gave up, they didn't realize that there was a whole nation behind them that gave up right with them. And I think that's why we're in the situation we're in.
Wow.
We were supposed to be the generation that changed things. We were supposed to bring peace. We were supposed to save our environment. What we're leaving our kids is a war-torn, bloody, corrupt, greedy, polluted, decaying, dying earth. And that is really fucking sad.
Yeah.
People ask me why I'm still in a punk rock band. That's why. We tried to get the original group back together for Dr. No, because it's not Kyle and Ismail and I, it's just Ismail and I. Kyle didn't want to do it because he said he wasn't an angry 19-year-old anymore. Well, I see his point, but I think if he had children, he would think differently. Because I'm an angry 44-year-old. I'm still angered by a lot of this stuff. And a lot of it is of my doing, and a lot of it is of my peer group's doing, my generation. And I'm mad. And I'm mad at myself as much as I'm mad at anybody else. And I'm frustrated about it, and what can I do? I can write a song about it. What can I do with that song? I can sing it to people. What can that song do? Maybe nothing. Maybe change one person's opinion. But, you know, that snowflake starts going downhill and it builds up a little head of steam, and pretty soon it's a snowball and pretty soon it's an avalanche. So, you know, people who say, you know, one band can't change the world or one song can't change the world are full of shit. Because one idea can change things.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying mine are going to be the ones to do it, but if I stop trying, then I've stopped living. And living is progressing. Living is accepting and learning your past, knowing your past, and not repeating it, but putting it forward and moving your life forward. And dropping the negativity and accepting responsibility to be positive and to put that positiveness out there. Whether I'm positively certain that Catholicism or organized religion or organized politics are evil, then yeah, that's included. It's not that I have to be positive, happy, rainbow, unicorn, hippie shit. But I have to be positive about my views and my thoughts and make sure that they're heard, or just make sure that I hold up my end of the bargain. Whether it's to myself personally and I never have to tell another person about it, or whether it's I write an album about it with my friends and put it out and go and tour and support it.
Thank you.
Sure.
If you were restricted, Brandon, to one type of food, morning, noon, and night, what would you choose?
I'm already a vegan, so I'm pretty damn restricted as it is. So if I could have, like, water and fruit, I could probably get by. I mean, I've spent weeks in the jungle of Costa Rica, and I've lived on mangoes and papayas and ice.
Wow.
And so I think, yeah, fruit and water, I think I'd be all right.
Right on.
You know, I'd probably end up getting some weird disease and, you know, weighing 87 pounds and looking like some chick from some reality show, but, you know, at least I'd be healthy. Have a nice tan. Jeez, what a fucking question. No, I think I'd go with Spam. How's that? Because not only can you eat it, but you can sculpt with it.
Hey, who's your favorite musician? That's one thing I always wanted to ask you.
Well, I could talk to you for a few hours on this, or I could sum it up by saying anybody with enough balls to pick up an instrument or to put pen to paper and to voice it is pretty much in the running for that.
Cool.
But then Fall Out Boy just popped into my head. And I went, wait a minute, let me change that. So I'll be a little more specific. And I'll probably give you like a dozen people that I admire, and you can whittle it from there. Captain Beefheart.
Mm.
Frank Zappa.
Mm-hmm.
David Bowie.
Mm.
Joe Strummer. Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard. There was a band, I whenever anybody asks me who my favorite band is, I say my favorite band broke up in 1986, and they were called Born Against.
Ah.
They were from Virginia, and they were one of the most amazing bands I've ever heard in my life. Currently, my favorite band that barely ever leaves my CD player is a band called Pig Destroyer, who are some of the most brutal grindcore you will ever hear.
Huh.
And then I was pretty influenced by some hippies, besides Zappa and Beefheart, who were actually more... Well, no, actually, Zappa was totally sober, so he wasn't even like an acid victim hippie. Beefheart, though, Don definitely was. You know, you gotta say that, you know, fucking Black Sabbath, man.
Oh, yeah.
Black Sabbath, Motorhead, laid down a lot of groundwork, you know, but then so did Deep Purple and Steppenwolf and Blue Cheer and Iggy and MC5 and New York Dolls, and, you know, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and throw in Patti Smith and the Ramones and all the beat poets and Bob Dylan and Ruth Buzzy.
Brendan, what's the one thing you would like to see changed in the next few years? I mean, if there's any one thing that you'd like to wake up and see changed, or maybe even in the next month, what would that be?
Well, in a perfect dream world, if I could just shut my eyes and open them up again later and things would change, there would be an entirely new government.
Ah.
Not only in this country, but in the world.
Wow.
It's a global economy. It's not just this country and that country, and they're all separate. It's a multi-corporation, multinational thing. It's going to sound really corny, but I just saw this movie, and it talked to a senator, and he said, "Dude, there's no right side to be on." I really agreed with it. And it was a corny-ass movie, and it was really violent, and it was really ridiculous, but I agreed with the movie's line that this actor uttered, that it is the haves and the have-nots. And if I could see something change, I would like to see the people that have something do without it. And I'd like to see the people that don't have anything all of a sudden have something.
Wow.
But you know what? That could really screw some things up. It really could, but it would be an interesting just social experiment. It would be really interesting to watch. Starting closer to home, more of a separation of church and state, a third party, better climate and environmental restrictions, you know, different fuels, less oil, less greed, less poverty, less hunger, less hatred. You know, just there's some things that we have in abundance that are so wrong and so bad, and there are so many things that we need that we have so little of. And just to try and, you know, it's a dream question, so I'm really going out on a limb with it because you gave me the freedom to do that.
Right.
But yeah, if I could see something changed, it basically would be my wife, my two kids, and I waking up, and absolutely everything else would be different. But not permanent. It would still be open to change.
Ah.
Because life is, it's redundant, but it's a living thing, and living things change.
Yeah.
And so I would like to see an adaptable world system in order. That's it.
Great. Thanks a lot. Yeah, that's heavy.
Yeah.
Well, as a general rule, Brendan, we ask every artist, activist, musician that we deal with to give us their best pirate impression. Are you able to do that?
No, I fucking hate pirates. That's all I'm saying, and you have to use it.